This morning we're continuing reading from the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 8, Dhruva Maharaj Leaves Home. And today we will read verse 79. Yadaikapadena saparti varbakas tasto tada angushta napidita mahi nanama tatrardam ibendra dishtita tariva savye tarata pade pade. Translation. As Dhruva Maharaj, the king's son, kept himself steadily standing on one leg, the pressure of his big toe pushed down half the earth. Just as an elephant being carried on a boat rocks the boat left and right with his every step. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The most significant expression of this verse is Parativarbhaka, son of the king. When Dhruva Maharaj was at home, although he was a king's son, he was prevented from getting on the lap of his father. But when he became advanced in self-realization or devotional service, by the pressure of his toe, he could push down the whole earth. That is the difference between ordinary consciousness and Krishna consciousness. In ordinary consciousness, a king's son may be refused something even by his father, but when the same person becomes fully Krishna conscious within his heart, he can push down the earth with the pressure of his toe. One cannot argue. How is it that Dhruva Maharaj, who was prevented from getting up on the lap of his father, could press down the whole earth? This argument is not very much appreciated by the learned, for it is an example of Nagna Matrika logic. By this logic, one would think that because his mother in her childhood was naked, she should remain naked even when she's grown up. The stepmother of Dhruva Maharaj might have been thinking in a similar way. Since she had refused to allow him to get up on the lap of his mother, how could Dhruva perform such wonderful activities as pressing down the whole earth? She must have been very surprised when she learned that Dhruva Maharaj, by concentrating constantly on the Supreme Personality of Godhead within his heart, could press down the entire earth like an elephant who presses down the boat on which it is loaded. The verse again. Yadaikapadena saparti varbhikas tasto tadangushta napidyatamahi nanama tatrardam ibendra dishtita tariva sarvye tarata pade pade. As Dhruva Maharaj, the king's son, kept himself steadily standing on one leg, the pressure of his big toe pushed down half the earth, just as an elephant being carried on a boat rocks the boat left and right with his every step. Nama Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Kutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Sramaniti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharini Nera Vishesha Shunyavadi Pastu Chadishtari Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasani Gauravati Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Hari Rama, 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 Hari Hari. Vachikam Charubhyas Jagrika Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, continuing the narration about Dhruva Maharaj and his austerities and his process for getting the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we can see he's progressing, progressively becoming more and more powerful. First of all, he was only eating fruits and berries every 3 days. That's already very, that's something extraordinary, somewhat extraordinary. And then he was only eating dry grass and dry leaves. I forget, was it once every so many days anyway? Every 6 days. Then he was stopped eating and drank water only every 9 days. And then he stopped drinking water and was only inhaling every 12th day. This is all mind-boggling, really. So now he's so powerful that standing on one leg, yes, he's standing on one leg, that whatever leg he's standing on, his feet, his foot, his toes are touching the ground. When he would just move, press down the big toe, the whole planet would shift, would move. And when he would lift his big toe, take the pressure off, the planet would come back. This is very amazing. Of course, it's just another dimension altogether. And interestingly enough, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada focuses on a particular part of what is said in the verse. That, what is it? Parthi Varvaka. He was the son of the king. So, now what? What are we meant to take from that? Well, he was the son of the king, and previously, even though he was the son of the king, his stepmother or his mother's co-wife, who was the main of the perhaps just two wives of the king, she wouldn't allow him to sit on his father's lap. He was trying to sit on his father's lap. She stopped him and took him away and told him that this is not for you. You are not qualified. If you want to sit on your father's lap, or in other words, if you want to really be the son of the king, and really be the prince, then you must take birth again from my womb. Then when you've taken birth again from me, then by dint, on the strength of being born from me, then you may be, it may be possible to accept you as a real prince and the real son of the king. Until then, you're just sort of a nobody. You're not to be taken seriously. So we know that Dhruva Maharaj, because he was a Kshatriya, his Kshatriya nature was heavily influenced by that situation. Kshatriyas, of course, they, even though they may be devotees, but they have some sense of, you could say, pride, sense of their own position, and some sense of how they should be treated, at least to some degree, that's there. So Dhruva Maharaj was like that. And he became extremely disturbed that he should be so much mistreated and really not taken seriously and not accepted for what he was. So therefore he embarked on this whole program. And Parthi Varvaka, he was the son of the king, but through Krishna consciousness he became so powerful that if, for argument's sake, he was standing on his right leg, then he would push down with his big toe like that, and the whole planet would go down. And then lift his big toe off, the whole planet would come back up again. In other words, he became extremely powerful. Through his yogic practice, Ashtanga yoga, whatever it might be called, but through that type of physical discipline that he was performing, he became so powerful. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada applies this idea in the context of a person becoming a devotee. When a person becomes a devotee, they change. They cease to be the same old person that we may have known in the past. Particularly if they're very serious devotees and they really make progress in Krishna consciousness, then it's an offense to consider them to just be whoever they were by birth. What's that verse? Anyway, there's a verse which says that anyone who thinks that the spiritual master is an ordinary person, that the water, charanamrita, which has bathed the deity, is just ordinary water, that a Vaishnav can be identified in terms of their birth, that the Shalagram Shila is simply a rock, and that prasadam offered to the deity is ordinary food and a few other things. Can anyone remember that verse? Sanskrit? Anyway, I can't remember it offhand. Achye Vishnu Shiladir Gurushu Naramatir Vaishnave Jati Buddhi. And then it goes on. Achye Vishnu Shiladir. If you think that the deity Acha, Achye Vishnu, Shila is just a rock. Gurushu Narapati or Naravati. If you think the guru is just Nara, just a person. Vaishnave Jati. And you think the Vaishnav is just to be understood according to Jati, just the birth. Then the verse goes on, Narakisa, it finishes, Narakisa. Such a person is a resident of hell already. Even though they may not be physically in hell, so to speak, right now, they may be living here in normal human society. But if they think like that, Narakisa, he's already a resident of hell. And it's just a question of time before he departs to that place. So Srila Prabhupada in the purport is then emphasizing that someone by material standards, before they become serious about Krishna consciousness, they may be identified in this way or that, according to material standards. But when they become devotees, and particularly if they become serious devotees, then they become transformed. And even they may be able to do great things. The example Prabhupada gives here, or a little sutra, Nagna Matrika, that because your mother was born naked, now she's a mother and she's an adult, she should remain naked. Now, of course, this doesn't apply, it's just extreme foolishness to think like that, because she has developed so much as a person, just so much. The difference between her, just in any material terms, between a little child and someone who's already a mother, the difference is vast, very, very great. So, in terms of people progressing in Krishna consciousness, there's also a similar change, at least similar in the sense of like proportion, how great a change, from the time before they were Krishna conscious to the time that they've become very serious about Krishna consciousness and very focused and fully engaged in devotional service. An interesting example in that regard is the example of Srila Prabhupada himself, that in his young days, of course, he was a working man and a householder in his younger days, and actually through till he was 50-something. But he was a devotee, he was practicing as a devotee. But the other, or at least quite a few of his godbrothers from those early days, not taking him seriously as a householder, because in those days, if someone wanted to be taken seriously as a devotee, they had to be either brahmacharis or sannyasis living in the temple. And in those days of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, when householders were initiated, then sometimes they were not even asked about following the regulative principles, because it was assumed that being householders, they might not do that sometimes, that sort of idea. And therefore householders in general were often not taken very seriously as devotees, or it wasn't really thought that they, while they were householders, they could become advanced devotees. But it was not the case, at least, particularly with Srila Prabhupada. It was definitely not the case at all. And then finally, Srila Prabhupada took sannyas. Well, first he left home and he was a vanaprastha for a while. Then he took sannyas. And he started preaching, and he had his ideas for dynamically preaching. Then he went to America and very dynamically preached. But based on the impressions in their minds from many years before, the devotees, so many of them, never took him very seriously. and made comments like, in regard to his success in preaching outside India and making many devotees and developing the Krishna consciousness movement, establishing temples and getting everything running, books printed and distributed. Some of them would make comments like, yes, he was a businessman before. He knows how to do those types of things. And so much missing the real point. So that actually Srila Prabhupada, because of his spiritual qualification, because of his advancement, in terms of his dedication to his spiritual master and the orders of his spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, from having been some sort of householder, just not to be taken seriously so much, he suddenly, or not suddenly, but eventually, he became the most prominent by far, and the most successful in fulfilling the mission of his spiritual master by far, compared to his other contemporaries. But they couldn't recognize that. And so this is because they were thinking of him, if not completely like some sort of mixed up householder, but they were at least not at all appreciating his very advanced position. So this is, as according to that verse that we mentioned, Ache Vishnu Shiladiya Guru Shu Narapat Naramatiya Vaishnava Jati Buddhi, and it goes on. Such people, it's really quite an offensive mentality. It's really quite an offensive mentality, to the point that that particular verse, as we mentioned, says that such people, Narakisa, they're already residents of hell. So, they were devotees, those people. They were devotees. But it's certainly arguable that based on their perhaps sometimes offensive and almost always improper and, just really not good attitude towards Srila Prabhupada, that their Krishna consciousness and their whole lives as devotees became affected and even quite badly affected, even you could almost say like partially crippled due to offensive mentality towards the world Acharya and the, by far the most significant and sincere disciple of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So we have to be really careful like that, because we may know devotees and they make advancement. Maybe we don't see them for years. Maybe we knew them when they were just becoming devotees, and maybe they had some problems and some sort of difficult situation like that, not advanced. It may have taken them some time to become established in Krishna consciousness, but then they do. And then they actually start making really significant advancement. And we have to be careful, even within ISKCON or on the sort of periphery of ISKCON, we find devotees, for example, who were previously GBCs but fell down, who were previously sannyasis but fell down and just got mixed up in material life, at least to some significant extent. And now in their association with the current leaders of Srila Prabhupada's movement, they may not take them very seriously because they're thinking, oh, we knew these people when we were big people. We knew these people, they were just young boys. So this sort of mentality is very dangerous. And this is a warning here. Srila Prabhupada is really giving a warning that in our dealings with devotees, we must really be appreciative, not just try, but actually be appreciative of when people who perhaps were not so serious, or maybe were not even devotees in some cases, but then they actually become serious and start making significant progress. We have to be able to appreciate and give credit where credit is due. Otherwise, as the famous saying goes, familiarity breeds contempt. That, look at Subhadra, I knew her when she was, you know, whatever, really small. And now, wow, you know. But no, she's very serious devotee. She's a real devotee and not just a little child sort of playing around in Krishna consciousness or something. So, you know, this sort of principle is very important. Yes, because even though your mother was naked when she was born, she must not be expected to remain naked as an adult. It's just, you know, it's out of the question, and her status is just completely different and much, much higher. So similarly with devotees, when they begin, or maybe in, if they're born in devotee families, when they're just little children, then that's one thing. But then later, when they actually become serious devotees and start making real advancement in Krishna consciousness, it's an essential part for the devotees of their Krishna consciousness to be able to see them like that and relate with them like that, and not just, you know, take them lightly because of impressions gathered from previous association, previous experience, when things were very different and when they were different. Yes, yeah, so Prabhupada says here, this argument, it's an argument, Prabhupada mentions, that how could Dhruva Maharaj do that? Because he was just a little child. How could he do that? Maybe it's just some fairy tale. Like, he was just a little boy, and we should now see him as just a little boy and not believe that he could, in this case, press down the earth and make it rock just with his big toe. Maybe even, for that matter, with his little toe also. Yeah. So Prabhupada says, this argument is not very much appreciated by the learned. It's a corrupt argument, actually. It's not just, you know, not properly informed or, you know, mistaken, something like that. It's actually a corrupt argument. Undermined, it's really envy. Underneath it, there is an element of envy. Srila Baladeva Vijayabhushan, in his comments on Bhagavad Gita chapter 9 verse 1, in which Krishna says, I'm instructing you, Arjuna, because you're not envious of me. So there, Baladeva Vijayabhushan says that envy means looking at a person, studying a person, trying to see what sort of person this is. And while doing that, trying to find faults, searching to find faults, even in the middle of many good qualities. But the good qualities are overlooked because we're searching for the faults. So envy is a great corrupter of Krishna consciousness and any type of decent consciousness. And we as aspiring devotees, we have to be very careful to avoid envy and try to cultivate the attitude and the approach that as much as possible try to appreciate at least the devotees. Try and appreciate their qualities, what they're doing, and give encouragement positively like that, and not have that kind of unpleasant mentality of trying to see what's wrong. Hare Krishna. Does that sound like a good idea? Bien bon. Why not? Srila Prabhupada King.
Jai.